bum 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 bum. Crazy for me growing up because, like, as a Yankees fan, even though it's not Enter Sandman, anytime someone's referred to as Sandman, I think of Mariano Rivera.
It's true. I mean, Michael Myers is an ultimate closer. Yeah, right? Exactly. I would say Laurie Strode's a closer.
Well, Michael Myers is a life closer. He decides when life is over.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, all right. Scalpels, kitchen knives, anything.
And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike Wan. This is also Mike.
Also, Mike, we're off to a gross start.
That's right, and why not?
Extra gross.
That's right. We're doing it. We are seeing things through the eyes of the antagonist, as you just described to me.
You relate to the wrong characters in this
How's
franchise.
That?
It is freaking me the hell out.
Mike started to recognize my ultimate master plan here, because this has all been one long plot to just inundate Mike with a Clockwork Orange type video viewing of having enough time to see these movies over and over again.
Look, I'd seen Halloween 1 four or five times throughout my life.
Yes.
Now, before that rewatch.
And it's doubled.
I watched it five times in 2 weeks. I've watched Halloween 2 and H2O four times a piece in 2 weeks. They're an hour and 25 minute watches on AMC On Demand.
Yeah.
On TV. So and that's with commercials. So I can fast forward commercials. It's probably like an hour and 15. So I don't know if I'm watching an expedited version, but it's like really quick. It's like watching, it's like binge watching TV right now.
The words you're looking for are thank you.
No, I'm freaking the hell out. I'm having weird dreams. It's all your fault. But I am having fun watching these movies. All of them, really. I'm up to Return of Michael Myers. I even had fun watching that.
Yeah, so you're ahead of me. And I actually said to you after you were done with Halloween, I'm like, congratulations, you reached the end of Respectable Cinema featuring Michael Myers. But that's for a future episode. Today we're doing something a little different. Yeah.
Halloween 2.
We had plans to combine Halloween 2 and H2O, but we are long-winded, it seems.
As always, best laid plans, they don't work out. And here's the thing. When Michael Myers is involved, best laid plans are erroneous. They never work out, Michael.
No. And of course, with Michael Myers, your best laid plans are to live. And he doesn't want you to, so yes. We're going to combine the Laurie Strode storyline and finish that up, covering H2O and Halloween 2 here today.
The Mr. Sandman sequels, all in one episode.
But unfortunately, no, once we got long-winded and getting into Halloween 2, the good, and yes, very much the bad, we realized we were long, and instead of bogging you guys down with a huge hour and a half, three-hour episode, we decided to cut it up into two parts.
You'll get more episodes, more MMO. You might get five from us next week.
That's right, and who doesn't want more of us, basically?
Six, if you count the one we're doing for all the horror.
We are busy is what we're saying.
Oh, good Lord.
Somebody needs to pay us. But yeah, guys, so we're doing a Halloween 2 today. This is the standalone episode. It's going to be a review of Halloween 2. And it's important because for those of you that are hardcore Halloween fans, you know that this is not the end of the Laurie Strode through line. And we'll get to that and what happens in Resurrection as it comes up. But I like to think, personally, Resurrection never happened. So none of that counts. And of course, David Gordon Green shares the same thing because on the Halloween sequel, reboot, whatever you want to call it, coming out on the 19th, the new Halloween movie, this is, none of this matters. From this point, the only stuff that's in play for that movie is what we covered in our last episode featuring Halloween 1. So these are all alternate storylines and alternate timelines that we want to go through just to recap everything.
So this is like a fever dream of David Lynch meets Ed Wood in some weird way that created this sequel that never was.
I can't have David Lynch's name attached to Halloween 2.
However, I must say that my thesis statement's going to be for this movie, it is a great bad movie, and I had so much fun watching this.
It's up there.
It is. There's some greatness in here.
Yeah, without a question. And we're going to start with Halloween 2, Michael.
So it's directed by Rick Rosenthal, who will come back to the series to helm Halloween Resurrection in 2002.
He really didn't have to.
Rosenthal's career has otherwise been primarily on television with episodes of Smallville, Veronica Mars, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer on his resume. And arguably, he's had a more successful, well, fans of Buffy might get mad at me for this, but he had a more successful producing career as an executive producer of Won't You Be My Neighbor, this year's Morgan Neville documentary, Mr. Rogers documentary that we love.
Covered that in an Oscar Sprint profile recently. Really, really great documentary.
Rosenthal has two Emmy nominations for producing Transparent on Amazon, I Love Dick on Amazon, and Mean Creek, Nearing Grace, some of his other highlights there, critically acclaimed films and miniseries.
He's so. a little legitimate television producer, legitimate filmmaker. It was in good hands.
So Carpenter and Deborah Hill were both brought back as producers and as screenwriters on this film. They agreed to it, as we said, during the Halloween 3 profile. This would end the Michael Myers, Laurie Strode story.
It's one of my favorite running gags throughout all these movies is that this is it. This is the last one featuring Michael Myers.
We're doing this because it has to be done. It has to be done. The fans ask me every single day to finish it once and for all. We have to do it. So, yes, that was the agreement going in. They had planned the Tommy Lee Wallace Halloween 3 already. That was in development. That was getting set for production at the same time Halloween 2 is going here. So they're planning the spinoff / cinematic universe.
Anthology series, yeah.
Yeah, that's about to hit. So that was fascinating to me. Carpenter and director Rosenthal got into a bit of a feud after this film was released and got killed by the critics because Carpenter was brought on to change a lot of the scenes and change a lot of the work in the editing room because everybody, to a man and woman at the studio, they did not like Rosenthal's cut after he finished the first draft. It was more of a thriller, Rosenthal says, than it was a horror movie. So Carpenter actually reshot a bunch of stuff, put a lot of gore in there, a lot of the kills he reshot, and then of course, he took a stronghold in the editing room. Now, after the critics killed this thing, Carpenter's like, I barely had anything to do with it. Rosenthal's like, he ruined my perfect movie. They had a bit of a feud. I don't know if they've made up since then.
Let me do this and change this and twist this, and now it's my movie, and I had nothing to do with it.
John Carpenter, I will say this, he does not hold back in an interview.
He is the curmudgeon-y old. I have such a deep love and respect for him just as a man in interviews because you're absolutely right. He's the definition of DG. He just does not care.
Right, absolutely. You could just see him grumbling when he wants to say something. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll hold back and just not say anything, but he won't give you lines of bullshit.
No,
that's what's great about those interviews. So,
and I think it's important to note, too, this is 1981 when this is released, so we don't know that... We know Halloween is a cult classic, essentially, at this point, the original. We don't know that it's this cinematic pillar of horror and what it's going to be the forefather of to come. So it's not like this sequel was trashed by critics and it's like, you ruined this holy property. It was more like, that kind of is a disappointment.
Yeah, a lot of people thought it was a disappointment. Box office wasn't as good, but we'll get into those. Still, you know, much of the cast returns. Jamie Lee Curtis is back as Laurie Strode, profiled her in her last Halloween review there. Donald Pleasance is once again Dr. Sam Loomis. Charles Cyphers is still Officer Brackett. Nancy Keyes returns as a cameo of a corpse of Annie Brackett.
Yeah, reportedly it took absolutely no convincing for Pleasance to come back. He's on credit talking to producer Yablans, who's like, I'll do 22 of these movies. Yablans reportedly, another documentary featuring the making of this movie, Yablans reportedly told Donald Pleasance, well, Donald, if you want to do 22 of them, I'll do 22 of them. Let's do 22 of them.
That was a 44-minute documentary. It's on YouTube, mm-hmm. but we did. We watched that as well. Okay, you have to. In terms of new cast members, we get paramedics played by Leo Rossi, who's Francis of Lighten Up Francis from Stripes there. He's a pot-smoking horn dog, the opposite of his partner, the clumsy bimbo Jimmy.
How great were the 80s?
Jimmy has a hopeless crush, creepy crush, because Laurie's basically sleeping during most of this crush.
Well, to his credit, he didn't realize that she was basically in a coma during one scene.
That's how much of a bimbo he is. Yeah. But yeah, he's got a crush on Laurie at first injured sight there. Ugh. Jimmy is played by Lance Guest. Guest is, of course, the lead in The Last Starfighter. That'll be directed by Nick Castle.
Why does this keep coming up? I've admitted I haven't seen The Last Starfighter. Get off my back, Halloween.
It's the Halloween connection. Nick Castle saw his buddy's film. Carpenter's produced and written, co-written film, Halloween 2, and cast Lance Guest from that film in the lead of his movie.
I have to see it.
All right, so how about that connection? Mike's mad about it, but everybody else is like, yes.
Just mocking me.
Of course, every nurse in Haddonfield Hospital is like a Victoria's Secret level model beautiful.
It's the best looking town in America.
Oh, my God. Pamela Susan Shoup will go hot tubbing as Karen. Gloria Gifford plays Mrs. Alves. Tawny Moyer is Jill. And Anna Alicia is Janet. None of them shall survive.
What do you think the average body mass index for the people of Haddonfield is?
Yeah, not... well, in real life? Haddonfield doesn't exist in real life.
Right.
It's a Jersey town.
What were you talking... In real life, it's not real.
Let's just say the weight index is not us. out there. Right.
We would be outcasts. Also, right. Wouldn't be able to run away from Michael Myers. We'd be like, thank God you're walking, dude.
Only security guard roles. Incompetent security guard roles. Only guard. That's what we could get.
Yes. Fair. Good job. Yes.
If you wanted to be nurses or paramedics.
And but he tried to hang us in the closet and just keep snapping and we'd fall to the ground.
fat jokes. Anyway, this time the shape is played by, listen to this name, Michael, Dick Warlock.
You're in the wrong career, buddy.
Dick Warlock.
You're in the wrong field. You should be in movies, but not horror movies.
Plays the horror movie stuntman here. Dick Warlock is known for stunt work in films like Spaceballs and Escape from New York. Long resume there.
And can I say, again, in the documentary, if I were to meet that man in person, there's no way you would assume that he is the guy with the moniker Dick Warlock.
No.
He's like the nicest guy in the world.
Nicest guy. And he's a nice stuntman.
Yeah.
You know, he really talked his actors through a lot of these kills that are horrified kills.
Yeah.
It's so nice the way the actors characterized him. Like, oh, he cushioned my fall as he's like choking my character out. He's also with his foot. I'm playing footsie with Mike under the table right now. Cushioning my fall down to the ground is very sweet.
Yes, very killing mass murder.
Halloween 2 also stars Jeffrey Kramer as Graham, Hunter Von Leer as Gary Hunt, Ford Rainey as Dr. Mixter, Cliff Emmerich as Mr. Garrett, and Nancy Stevens from the beginning of Halloween's 1 and H2O, as well as Escaped from New York, is Marion here.
I forgot about the tie-in in H2O. Yeah. That was a nice little Easter egg.
Marion is, of course, the liaison to Dr. Loomis. A couple of hours after, she's the nurse that was going to take Michael from the mental hospital with Loomis to the judge.
Yes. And in H1, she's the one with the infamous line, since when are they allowed to wander around? And, of course, all that happens. Yes. Michael terrorizes her as well.
In the car, she does a great job as
she's been around. Here. She's a recurring character in this franchise.
She's got an exposition dump
storyline too. Yep.
For bulk of her agency in Halloween 2 here, and she does a nice job with it. And I thought H2O. We're going to talk about her again. She's also been married to Rick Rosenthal since 1981. Go figure.
I wonder how she got this part. Mike, that's not fair. She was in the original with Carpenter. That's right. A joke.
Mike, one of this cast, who deserves to die most? Who are you rooting for Dick Warlock to kill the worst?
How is it? It's either the EMTs or Donald Pleasance. Like, Dr. Loomis is unforgivably psychotic in this movie.
He's nuts.
So, taking it from
three. Stop that, boy!
Yeah. He's shooting at innocent people.
Why are you running away from me? Let me go! Give me my gun!
He's watching innocent people die and just turning his back and going to a different place. He's not great in this movie.
I can shoot into a crowd of people. You can't as an officer of the law, but I can!
Right. So that would be my answer.
All right. My answer is Bimbo Jimmy. I mean,
he would be,
die.
Yes. It's 1 and 1A for me there, too.
He needs to die immediately. He's a total klutz throughout this movie. I was rooting for him to die so hard, and it didn't happen. It's my great quibble in the Halloween franchise so far.
He should have. Yeah, you're right. Especially with one scene in particular we'll get into.
I want to talk about how he should have gone out. But all right, so you have some specs here.
Here's some specs. Halloween 2, directed mostly by Rick Rosenthal. Also, Mike just told you that. Written by Carpenter and Hill, starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Donald Pleasance. This is all information that you're being told for a second time. Universal Pictures was the distributor, and Halloween 2 premiered October 30th, 1981. So they're really hitting that sweet spot with, we have something people want to see.
It's a Halloween-themed movie, see?
You understand? Although, I think the 2018 Halloween release is smarter than releasing it on Halloween. You get it a week, 2 weeks before Halloween.
You maximize your window.
Marinate, yeah. Because once November 1st comes, you're like, why are we going to see a Halloween horror movie? Right. It's Thanksgiving.
Right. A couple weeks before is usually smarter. Right. Just like with a Christmas movie.
92-minute runtime. Dino De Laurentiis Corporation is the production company. Once again, De Laurentiis, the grandfather of Giada De Laurentiis. Also, Mike's brother John texted us and demanded we acknowledge one of his favorite Food Network chefs has a connection to these films.
Yeah, we bow to pressures of any kind. My brother, we're just spineless. Yeah, my brother texted us and he's like, how have you not mentioned Giada De Laurentiis?
Of course, your brother, my former roommate, and a man that once yelled at his wife for not preparing her own meatball sub correctly, so I can understand his passion for this.
He has passion for food. He just texted me quesadilla pictures. He's like, I'm starting my quesadilla restaurant. So look out for that, folks. And they look delicious. I want to like break into his house and eat whatever leftovers he has. has.
What a person. If Michael Myers were real, John does not deserve to die.
If you get a break in, John, it's not Michael Myers. It's Michael.
It's also pseudonym. Michael.
Breaking.
Critical reception. The numbers are kind of all over the place. Metascore 40, not great. IMDb 6.6 out of 10 on 60,000 plus
solid
views. Not bad. Rotten Tomato, 31% on critic scores. Average score, 4.6 out of 10. 24 out of 35 reviews are rotten. Not great. 63% audience score. Average rating was 3.3 out of 5. 76,000 plus votes. Not bad. So again, it's one of those crowd pleasers, but the critics, and you put it under a harsh light, not going to get a lot out of it.
3.3 out of 5 as an audience rating is like above some perfectly Oscar, acceptable. Above a lot of Oscar movies.
And 6.6 out of 10 for IMDb too. It's and those are the ones you have, you know, like we just said, 50,000 plus reviews, 76,000 plus. So it's a relative crowd pleaser.
Crowd pleaser.
Yeah. Roger Ebert called this film, quote, a fall from greatness that, quote, doesn't even attempt to do justice to the original.
Yes. Critics.
That's why we're here. That's why we're going to go through it. We're going to see if we agree with that. The box office, the numbers it pulled in are relatively disappointing as far as where the franchise started just 3 years earlier. Domestic box office, $25.5 million on a $2.5 million budget. So regardless of it being a little bit of a step back as far as money made, it's still making 10 times its budget. So it's still, and like we said in the Halloween 3 episode, it's still... much bigger budget than the $325,000 it was given for the original.
Merchandising is making money. I think home videos, is that starting up yet? Is that mid-80s?
I would think so, right? At least beta videos or, you know, Betamax, stuff like that.
We don't know, people.
I was born in 87, I'm sorry. 84,
so. So some production nuggets here, Mike. According to historian Nicholas Rogers, there was a craze of anti-occult movement stuff going on. That was religiously motivated. That was early 80s. That was for certain. We saw it in True Detective Season 1, Paradise Lost, West of Memphis, Crime Docs there, even though that's kind of early 90s. So it does kind of make sense that the producers and that the studios were trying to move on from just the slasher psycho killer Michael Myers craze, and were trying to move into the Season of the Witch, into the Samhain stuff.
Just wait for Halloween 6.
Oh, no. Clarity is king in storytelling, though, Michael. These sequels suffer from a bit of disjointedness.
How dare you?
Like, I already mentioned a lot of these nuggets already. It seems like there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Hill, Carpenter, Tommy Lee Wallace.
Anytime you have the pre-production story is this writer was hired to save it, this writer came in to change it. Eight times out of 10, 7.5 times out of 10, the output is probably a letdown.
It seems like there was a deliberate pace to this movie, and then we had a lot of screwing with it in post.
Right.
And it seems like some shots are just totally awkward, and there's some that are absurdly preposterous.
They just don't make sense.
And no sense whatsoever. We're going to have real fun breaking these down.
But again, I'd say, wait for Halloween 6.
Mike, you want to read the premise here?
Yeah, the IMDb premise reads as such. Pretty simple. While Sheriff Brackett and Dr. Loomis are on hunt for Michael Myers, a traumatized Laurie is rushed to the hospital and the serial killer is not far behind her. So it's kind of interesting. This movie literally picks up the exact moment that the first one ended. And not only is it the exact moment, they actually reshoot the ending scene of Halloween 1.
Fascinating. So I'm going to let you drive the bus here, but I'll give the play-by-play a little bit. So we see the final sequence of Halloween 1. We kind of see the footage of Laurie Strode talking to the kids. She's younger there. I don't think that's reshot.
I don't think so either. I think we get to the reshot stuff when Loomis enters the picture.
And it's really cool that happens because you see Michael falling from the house in a different way.
Different perspective. We're outside in, whereas proposed last time in H1, we were inside out, seeing him fall outside the house. Now we're seeing him fall to the ground from the outside. But again, Loomis, a difference from Halloween 1. Loomis doesn't peer over the balcony to see Michael sprawled out body. Now this time he runs downstairs, runs to the outside.
They purposely don't show us Michael's face either.
I like that. Yep.
Which is strange, but it does kind of work, I guess. They don't want to give that reveal right off the bat that he's just a man.
Yeah, and it kind of plays with how they treat him throughout this whole movie as well. He's less a man and more, which is ironic considering what they do with the relationship between him and Laurie, but he's less a man and more so the embodiment of evil.
Now, I love the new scenes with Loomis. We get some new lines from him. I shot him 6 times!
I shot him 6 times!
He's not a man,
he's not
evil.
Human!
He is the purest evil!
I shot him 6 times!
While he's running into the cop car.
Loomis is unhinged this entire movie.
Freaking out.
He's not a man that can be trusted.
And it makes sense.
Yes.
It makes sense that Loomis is totally bonkers. And it makes sense for his motivations later in the story. Okay, so Laurie's put into an ambulance. We really see the fallout there of the whole the nightmare that it was. She is sent to Haddonfield Hospital.
Oh, what did you think about the... I should have brought this up earlier. But what did you think about the new synthesized techno...
I did not like it.
I wasn't crazy about it either.
I love the orchestral score of H2O later on.
Yes, agree.
But H2... Yeah,
they leaned heavily into the 80s there.
Right, no. And early 80s music, as we've proven thus far in our best original song half episodes, not our sweet spot.
No.
Okay, so Michael is on the loose. He kills another high school girl randomly, which is pretty scary.
Hated it.
Okay.
So I liked it in the sense that if you watch this on the heels of Halloween 1, it makes sense because he's already started killing and it's the same night, it's a continuation. If you start this as its own sequel, this own standalone movie, watching it in a vacuum, the beauty of Halloween 1 was that the world was getting closer and closer and closer in on people. He was stalking. He was stalking his prey. He was doing everything he can to kind of psychologically freak them out before he actually did anything physical. And in this one, right away, we see him not picking a prey. He just sees a woman and is like, I'm going to kill you now.
In a way, to me, based on the new movie, It's pretty scary that he just will randomly kill somebody.
I could see that, sure.
And it's kind of freaky in early parts of this movie. It's weird, like his sense of justice and his sense of who he's going to kill and not going to kill. Like he breaks into the old folks' house to take a knife.
Right.
And the elderly couple, they don't get touched.
And I guess that's my problem with it, where if you're going to just kill, then just kill. Or it's kind of weird to me the way that was handled, but...
I mean, that didn't look like a great sandwich, pair of sandwiches that they're making there. There was like one slice of cheese and one slice of bologna with mayonnaise. Of course I want mayonnaise on my sandwich.
Maybe they're trying to cut back on their sodium.
They're trying to cut back on their sodium. And maybe that is their saving grace. You know, they're trying to be conscious. Okay, that makes sense. Again, you know, morality and ethics.
So it's not gluttony. Maybe he's following the seven sins here.
Right. You know? It's absolutely true. You know, if you commit sins of adultery... You're done.
Yeah.
If you're gossiping on the phone, you're a high school girl.
There you go. Maybe that's
you
it.
Are
all right.
Done.
We just finished this. We just figured this out.
And that is logic in this universe.
Could be. I think we might have just gotten to the bottom of it. I'm more okay with it.
Anyway, Loomis thinks he sees Michael walking the streets. I'm going to jump around a little bit. I don't know if I'm thoroughly linear here, but Loomis thinks he sees Michael walking the streets. It turns out to be a drunken kid in the same mask later on. We realize that. But what a surprise, Michael. Loomis charges the boy with a gun. It takes multiple cops to restrain him, and this boy runs away into traffic, backing into traffic, and then getting
destroyed. By a cop car.
The filming was sped up to get him just blow up, fireball. That was hilarious in the editing, and it was disturbing. And then the other idiot cop is like, was it him? And it's just like a fireball. How is he supposed to know it was him?
And not to mention Loomis. So that happens right in front of Loomis. And then the other cop comes up to Officer Brackett and was like, and he's one of the bodies at the house.
Oh,
so
by the way.
Officer Brackett's got to run off. Loomis, who is just directly responsible for this kid losing his life in front of him and being burned alive, immediately turns around.
I gotta go.
It's like, I'm coming with you, Brackett.
Yeah, let me get away from this.
Like, that would make sense if the
lawsuit that I just caused.
If the subtext here was that he knew in the moment that definitely wasn't Michael, I get it. Like, that makes sense. But he had no idea that wasn't. He asked a dentist to meet him at the morgue later to prove that it was or was not Michael. So he has no idea. He may have just killed this innocent teenager, which, by the way, he did.
He did. He did. He's like, I'm gonna wind up in a courtroom for this. Let me back away slowly from this issue. That's absolutely right. All right. So Officer Brackett and Loomis, they ID Annie.
Back at Lindsay's house where all the horrors happen. Yeah.
New cop takes charge. Loomis will go to the school. Then he'll go to the with the dentist and try to get Michael or that corpse ID.
Yeah, and obviously the narratively speaking, that was done with Loomis to keep him away from Laurie's storyline too, to kind of separate from the hospital and all that.
He's the huntsman. He's going to come in at the last second. So we meet Nurse Karen out in the streets. Nurse Karen is going to be headed to her shift. She's coming from a Halloween party where she didn't have a good time. She's talking shit about it. Again, that's going to be her downfall. After her car drives away, red car, a kid with a boombox bumps into what we think is Michael Myers because they start the Halloween theme music.
So this
correct?
Is all one. Some of the things I'm going to highlight as we go through this plot is the homages that obviously Rosenthal was doing towards Carpenter, who at one time seemed to be his mentor or something he idolized. But this is obviously two homages in one. One with the kid bumping into Michael, just like the bully bumped into Michael at Halloween 1 after making fun of Tommy and bullying Tommy. And then this is immediately followed by one of those long one-take tracking shots where we follow who we think is Michael walking through the town.
Towards the Haddonfield Hospital, towards the sign of Haddonfield Hospital. And he walks in the opposite direction that the red car with Nurse Karen went.
Right.
Because Nurse Karen's got to drop off her friend at home or at another party or whatever. I missed that. But they're going in opposite directions before they will all meet at the hospital. They all meet at the hospital. Karen is shown driving into the hospital and Michael's in the back seat.
Yeah.
In the very next scene.
So we have who we think is Michael bumping into Boombox Kid walking after Karen had already pulled out and driven. Now, Karen's going to end up at the hospital because she works there. She says as much. Michael, I don't know. Why is he? I don't understand any of this.
There must have been a huge part of this movie cut out of there. They only had what they had. They wanted to keep the POV stuff because that's the homage, like you said. And they also wanted the Michael in the backseat of Karen's car thing because it's a little spooky.
Right.
They don't care if the logic matches
zero
up.
Zero continuity there.
There's no continuity. You can't have. They're definitely, unequivocally, they want that to be Michael in the streets there.
Without question.
Because the music.
The theme music starts playing, and it's the exact same shot as Halloween 1.
And then it's thoroughly impossible that we're shown Karen driving in. So it's not like there was time for Michael to, you know, sneakeroo into the backseat of her car. He's already in that car.
Just imagine how that was in the editing room and in post. And they were like, fuck it, just go with it.
Just go with it. It makes no sense. Michael will essentially kill everybody in the hospital one by one, from the security guard to each and every nurse. He cuts every phone line, Michael. He makes every parked car in the lot unusable. But he saves Laurie to last?
Well, he's getting creative, that's for sure. He's not just straight up killing people with knives anymore. His showmanship that he had in Halloween 1, playing the role of Bob with the ghost and the glasses, tricking Linda to, you know, think it was Bob wanting more hanky-panky and then killing her. He capitalizes on that in this one. So maybe
we realize that his mission in this movie is to kill Laurie. That's his mission for coming back. And yet he now gets a whole movie's worth of kills before he kills Laurie, after he finally built up to Laurie in the last movie.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
No.
All right, so security guard, doctor, nurse, Karen playing hanky-panky with Francis there from Stripes. That's a gross kill in the hot tub.
So that scene is kind of, at least for me, one of the earliest. We didn't have a lot of misdirection scares in Halloween 1. And this one is kind of, it starts as a misdirection scare because Karen goes into this dark room in the hospital and sees this body laying there, and the ominous music starts playing and she's approaching it slowly. And we know Michael's in the hospital grounds already. So we think this is setting us up to scare us and think that Michael's the one in the bed and Karen's going to die there. But no, we see that it's just the bud, the EMT bud, laying there. I can't remember there being a lot of misdirection scares earlier than this one in horror history. So it's kind of, and now they're, I mean, it's an overdone trope to death in every horror movie. And it's like, you know, when the fridge closes and there's a sharp music and there's a non-violent character there.
It's weird because I viewed that as just, another one of those scares because I'm jaded with
many
horror movies.
Yeah.
And that didn't work for me in any viewing of it. And yet, you're saying this was the trailblazing version of this?
No, I think, having seen a lot of horror movies throughout the years, I can't remember one earlier than 1981 that was so heavy on misdirection. And this one has a couple instances of them.
Okay, that's interesting. So Michael will later on do a misdirection, you know, failed kill where he'll stab pillows. Laurie,
yes,
and he stabs the pillows multiple times. Like, the first stab should have been enough to say, nobody there. Like, when he walked in the room and just looked at the bed, it should have been enough to say, nobody there. I mean, this is a man sickly obsessed with human anatomy and butchering it, and yet we have him not recognized.
Probably fair.
His eyesight's not great.
No, it's the masks.
This has been... You know, he needs up close and personal kills. Right, that's not great.
That's why it's a butcher's knife, not a gun.
His eyesight's bad. I think he gets motion sickness, so that's why he only walks. He doesn't run.
That is something inexplicable. We saw he was fleet of foot in Halloween 1.
I'm telling you what it is. He gets motion sickness.
That's fair.
He's
fine.
He cannot move beyond the gait that he shows.
Very, very slow, deliberate.
Yeah, he's a mall walker.
Yeah.
He was a mall walker, and he'll go very, very slow. He's a family in the mall, just taking their sweet time. This will be thoroughly emphasized in the scene where he's finally chasing Lori in an elevator. I mean, just one little crow hop, one little skip, and
now,
he's in that elevator.
I think that
end
was
of movie.
That was a deliberate decision as well, because, again, this movie to me was full of homages to Halloween 1, and I think having the scene from Halloween 1 where he's slowly closing in on her walking across the street, we have a couple instances of him doing that. And you're right, when viewed objectively in this movie, it made sense in Halloween 1 because he didn't want to cause a ruckus, he was just walking across the street. In this one, it makes no sense if all his intention was to kill with nobody around. Just pick it up a little.
Okay, so that's in a way, that's the Michael through the hospital through line. Again, I'm a little out of order here. I want to talk about the idiot Jimmy through line, because the idiot Jimmy through line discovers Nurse Alves in the room. Now, when you walk into a room and there's a lake-sized pool of blood on the floor, how is that not the first thing you see? It's not the first thing he sees.
And there was so much blood.
He walks into the room and goes right up to Nurse Alves and looks at her. Is she dead? I don't know.
Right.
Has to follow the tube in a close-up to the floor.
Where there's blood everywhere.
Blood everywhere. Slowly turns and slowly slips and falls back on his head and concusses himself.
I chalk that up to, I'm forgivable to that for early. I mean, not forgivable that he doesn't see the blood, but the awkward transition between him slowly turning and then we're supposed to believe that he wiped out. It's the same as when Michael Myers goes to stab Laurie and all of a sudden we see a still shot of an arm not moving with a knife going just grazing by it.
Do these...
The transitions were tough in the 80s.
Listen, this is hysterical on rewatch, by the way. And it's the funniest scene of the movie. When he slowly turns and then slips, I watched this with some friends and they were dying.
Is there anything Michael can't do, by the way? I mean, he set up an IV drip to drain this woman's blood?
He enjoys killing people. He does. He really does. He gets creative. It's his passion. Yes. So here's the thing about Jimmy. Even if he had a neck brace and two eye patches, that would be impossible to me.
To miss the pool of blood.
When you step on the ground, two eye patches, you don't even need to see it. You could feel it when you would slip going in. You wouldn't slip going out.
Is she dead?
And then, there's no question. She's like,
look, not great.
Any
not
peripheral,
a great optic.
Any peripheral vision whatsoever, like a camera's close-up lens zoomed in, is not how we walk through life.
Yeah.
I can see a full room
right
now, just staring at you and staring at the full room. I could see them both.
Especially
that's called peripheral vision.
Open the door and the light from the hallway is going to illuminate the blood.
A paramedic, of all people, of all professions.
That's a good point. Probably should get out of the business.
Only has tunnel vision. Like, how does he pick people up and bring them into the ambulance at the end of the day? Like, their arms must be getting caught in the doors.
Oh, he's just slamming them against sides
because
of
things. Because he has tunnel vision.
Right. Yeah, no, not a great EMT, Jimmy. I agree.
All right, so Lori is chased after the fake pillow scare, chased out of the hospital building by Michael. She's running and hobbling, and she's got a cracked foot, we learn. She's got a cracked foot, but she still gets out of there. You got the elevator thing. She gets out of the building, hides in a car. Scary sequence. Works fairly well, but she's fairly capable again.
Yes and no. I was reading your copy, and you have a big problem with when there was she's selectively capable as far as running and passing out, and she's still fighting off anesthesia that was given to her against her will. So I'm much more forgiving of that type of thing where she needs that. Yeah. She's adrenaline is taking her and taking her, and then she passes out.
Yeah.
I understand. I'm really making good impression.
But here's the thing. Later on, when Michael somehow figures out that she's in that car, she comes out of the car, and Michael's there, and then Loomis
arrives.
Yeah, this
one I don't have a good excuse for.
And then, you know, the Marion arrives at the same time with the cop, and she is crawling.
Yeah.
Again, she's running scenes earlier. Fine. Anesthesia, fine. But, and then she's like, help me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second they close the door,
yeah, that was bad.
That's bad.
That's bad.
That's bad. And then a few minutes later, she's up and sprinting.
Not great. Not great. Not great.
Not great. So the Loomis stuff, to catch you up on the Loomis stuff, he goes to the school with the cops. There's Sam Hain written on the wall in blood.
Yes.
All right, so this is kind of ominous.
And it's a nice throwback to Halloween 1, too, where we have this Sam Hain thing is going to be an actual motivating factor.
So we have the big cop who's liaison showing them the crime scene. Mm-hmm. He goes, and his dialogue in the scene, Michael, is as follows. Here. No. 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 Here. Here. That is his dialogue.
You're going to find this hard to believe, but there's some stuff in this movie I can't defend.
Fucking Hodor. As much as I love Hodor, love him, love him. Hodor is in this movie, you know, 20 whatever something years earlier.
I just couldn't get
over you would allow that as an actor to be your dialogue in a scene. What? You're that insecure with your acting that you would let a director say, you're going to say no four times in a row. Answer to every one of their questions. You're going to say here three times. And you're going to say it like the future Hodor in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's just going to be like somebody pushing a button. No. No.
It's almost like they had a soundtrack, right, and they just replayed it.
I'm fascinated with how you obsessed about these entirely insignificant
points. And then he gives the dumbest look on his face ever when they're talking about Sam Hain. This is the Fall Film Festival. This is the Fall Festival. We all make our gaffes. So I can forgive it. It's funny upon rewatch, but it's patently absurd.
It is. It is. I actually have one of the titles of my parts of my notes is in capital letters, absurdity.
So Loomis goes, I don't know when this all happens, but Loomis goes to the dentist at the crime lab there. And
goes to the morgue, meet the dentist.
Dentist says, I can't get you records on this for 2 weeks. There's no internet, you idiot.
We can't. It's Halloween night. Dark. Yeah.
I'm half in a bag. There's no way you're getting this before next Thursday.
But they are able to decipher that the kid killed in the Michael Myers mask was about 18 years old, as opposed to Michael Myers, who would be over 21. Fine. So that's how they know it's not Michael Myers.
So they figure, and then, so Loomis is like, all right, I'm back. He's back freaking the hell out.
So yeah, Loomis is dealing with the dentist, and he's losing his fucking mind. They end up going to the school back with the other cops. And then Marion makes an appearance out of nowhere at the school. Just no setup for her. And it's just like, hey, you got to come back to Smith's Grove. The governor wants you back.
Says the governor. Says this U.S. Marshal.
Yes.
The most incompetent U.S. Marshal in the history of the world. And says the mental hospital. They want you nowhere near this PR nightmare.
Which makes so much sense. It does.
Great.
It's a really good, really good excuse to get Loomis out of the picture. His reaction to what happens and how he stays in the picture. He's a felon. He's a felon.
Just thoroughly responsible for the deaths of teenagers.
Yeah, so he's killed.
In this
movie, he's killed at least one person directly.
Yeah.
Before that, he was attempting to murder that teenager,
absolutely.
And then he's in the Marshall's van with Marion. They're heading back now. Before we get into what Marion tells him there, he wants to stay in Haddonfield, so he pulls a gun on the Marshall driving the car.
Super illegal.
And then says, oh, you don't believe me? What is it you cops do? Fire a warning shot? And fires the gun through the passenger window, blowing it out. And it's played off in the script as like some, oh, he got his way, that damn thing. Loomis again.
And then the weirdest part of it is he convinces the cop to join sides with him.
With no coercing.
He's like,
he says, I handcuff you to the wheel, but I think I need you, so come on.
And the guy's like, what do I got to lose? This is my job as a U.S. Marshal.
Not to mention life.
You know, you got to have a code to live by if you're a U.S. effing Marshal.
This is not a man of high principles, I don't think.
No.
But yeah, so they're in the car. They're in the Marshal car. Loomis is being taken back to Smith's Grove. And Marion reveals, as every 80s and 90s movie had, there's this extra information you didn't know.
So, the extra information was foreshadowed earlier in the movie by a fever dream of Laurie Strode.
Yes.
She's thinking back to her childhood with Michael as her sister.
Which is played off as a dream, and it's implied to us that they have some kind of connection, but we're not sure what it is yet.
So that's just a bizarro thing. I mean, in retrospect, it all obviously it makes sense, but it's just ridiculous that she would have that dream in that state.
Right. Well, anesthesia does some crazy shit, man.
I don't know. Yes, I've seen Wild at Heart and all the David Lynch movies, but I don't think a dream would be that focused and telling of the most important exposition of your next 2 hours.
So Marion does reveal that there was this agreement to hide these files so nobody could ever see them. And that's why Michael Myers' doctor, who spent literally his life trying to keep this kid behind bars, learning everything he can about them, didn't know that Michael was Laurie's brother.
How about that too, where that Marion's like, listen, you have to leave at all costs right now. We have to get you the hell away. But here's the reason that you should stay the most.
You're right.
And let me give you...
You got a gun? Can you stick it in this marshal's neck?
The smoking gun of this entire situation, the key that's going to unlock all your questions.
Right. This is why we're having a sequel right now.
I'm going to tell you that immediately when we get into the car to get you out of town. Right. I'm not going to withhold that information tactfully at all.
So... Loomis is on his way to the hospital because he figures that's where Laurie was taken. We are back at the hospital. Jimmy, who has escaped death and is probably concussed, somehow wanders into the parking lot, happens to get in the car randomly that Laurie has taken.
There's cover. A lot of cars there.
Yeah, and he just happens to pick that one that Laurie has taken cover in. Looks at Laurie.
He's like, oh, hey.
Looks at Laurie.
You're so hot. You're so beautiful.
Just passes out, slams his head into the horn.
I'll save you. He is such an idiot. He is such an incompetent moron. He's a moron.
Yes.
With a capital Mo in this entire movie. And yes, so she basically knows she's got to get the hell out of there. It just so happens that Loomis and this new posse formed by...
the Loomis 3.
The U.S. Marshal who is embittered and who hates his job. It's not a U.S. Marshal with a moral code, any moral code whatsoever.
No.
And Marion, who just disappears after
Well, she
this.
Gets... She gets And she comes in the hospital and Loomis says, get on the radio outside and call for backup.
And she's like, happily, she's gone for the rest of the movie. There's no return of Marion at any point, which is absurd, and continuity errors abound. So
Laurie is in this anesthesian.
Yeah, yes.
All right. She's in this state where she's fighting the anesthesia.
She getting back into the building in the nick of time because Loomis.
Another homage. She has to pound on the door.
Instead of Tommy, open up.
It's please somebody open up.
Michael. Now this is the auto locking door of the hospital.
Yes.
Michael just walks through the glass.
Thought that was kind of cool.
I think so too.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And they have another standoff. Loomis shoots Michael a bunch of times.
Five more times. Shoots Michael five more times, and we see Michael bleeding, and he finally does succumb to the pain and falls down.
Now, does he grab another gun? Does he grab the cop's gun later on?
I don't know if he grabbed her or if he had a second one on him. But.
Michael got shot, got stunned, or plays possum, and kills the U.S. Marshal.
Who was just begging for death.
Right.
He's just like, at this point,
hey, let me get a closer look. I'm surprised he
didn't put the scalpel in Michael's hand and then just slit his own throat.
I mean, listen, you know, Loomis is telling everybody this whole story that he meets throughout this movie. I mean, there's after the scene where Brackett... It lost his child and just identified his daughter. Loomis goes on a soliloquy with the whole crowd watching over it, just scaring the ever-living out of every single bystander. How is this U.S. Marshal not aware that this is the boogeyman?
Oh, well,
according to Loomis.
Well, he sees he's an evil guy, and that's why he goes to check on him, because he was just shot five times, and he's like, oh, he's dead now. And then, of course, Michael pops up and kills him.
Kills him, and we have...
The Loomis, cat and mouse.
Loomis and Laurie run away to the, later on, the fire room, the gas room.
They end up cornering themselves. They end up going into a surgical room, and if you've ever had surgery of any kind, you know there's only one entrance and exit into those things.
So Loomis has two guns. He gives one gun to Laurie. I'm guessing he got the U.S. Marshal's gun at some point.
Sure.
Or he just stole a gun from somebody.
He's an Neo from the Matrix.
He had to have gotten the U.S.
His
Marshall
overcoat
gun.
Is just filled with firearms.
Yeah, it has to be the U.S. Marshal's gun. Anyway, Laurie has a gun. Loomis has a fake gun. Loomis is waiting to shoot Michael. Maybe he forgot he could have loaded it and whatever. He clicks. There's no bullets left in his own gun.
That old chestnut.
Michael scalpels him in the guts.
Yes.
So Loomis falls back. He's not dead. That's a slow, terrible death. So Michael basically gets a beat on Laurie, who's, if she's anesthetized,
yes,
Michael, she, at point blank range, mind you, but gets off the two most perfect shots in the history of gunsmanship.
Because he was she shoots him on top of her.
She shoots him, but one eye and then the other.
Yeah.
So that he has tears of blood.
And that was such a poetically beautiful sight. Yes, he is crying tears of blood, and the blood gets in Michael's eyes. So Michael turns from this psychotic, bloodlusting killer maniac into someone that cannot see and is just swinging wildly with a scalpel.
All right, so 17 less flails would have been artistically sufficient for me. When he is flailing 37 times during that sequence, it's just silly.
Wait a minute. You're forgiving of him randomly killing anyone in the opening scene of this, how he kills that girl.
Which is terrifying.
And now, because he can't see and all he wants to do is kill, you don't think he should be able to swing whenever he wants?
It's hilarious, but it's just ridiculous. 4 or 5 minutes. He's doing this, and of course they have to put on, like, they could have put on 2 tanks, but they put on 16 tanks. Everything. They unleash all the gas in the room, which is enough gas to blow up the whole town of Haddonfield. And yet they're both
contained explosion.
They're both gonna survive later on, and all Loomis gets is like a little birthmark on his cheek.
That was.
This is gonna be terrible.
That's clearly a retcon. Loomis was supposed to be very dead.
Yeah, and then Michael 10 years later still has his face wrapped up.
Yeah.
Also a problem, but that's Halloween
so,
4 issues.
Laurie escapes. Loomis lights the match, says, "It's time, Michael," which I thought was kind of
cool.
There's
a huge fireball of a
giant explosion. And then Michael comes.
Who's 5 feet away from Loomis?
Towards Laurie.
Yeah.
Engulfed in flames.
At the time of the explosion, Michael is 5 feet away from Loomis, who is lighting the match. Yeah. In a total heroic mm-hmm. moment. He's sacrificing himself to
save. Giving himself to get rid of this evil.
Loved it.
But Michael doesn't die. He comes like a man, literally a man on fire, walking towards Laurie. And he's not human. He's crazy. And he finally collapses and he's supposed to be dead.
Because fire. Fire, yes. Fire kills the beast. So that's good.
Yes.
It's a good finale, even though the swiping, you know, 27 less swipes, and I'm satisfied. I'm still satisfied. So, all right, so that's Halloween 2. We kind of worked through our best and worst scenes as we went. Michael, do you have anything left over from best or worst?
I liked Michael coming out in the flames. I liked, again, Jamie Lee Curtis's acting, showing fear and showing the dazed and confused look. She's phenomenal in
she's
this.
Good.
She's on her way to superstardom if she wasn't already by the 1981.
Yeah, she's a legitimate actress. She does a great job in H2O coming up.
Yep. And all the homages. I was a really big fan. You could tell they tried to treat this with the utmost respect and care that was set in Halloween 1. Sometimes it failed. Sometimes it came off as ludicrous. But I like the idea when fans get properties to make on movies out of. And that's clearly what happened here, even though it fell short.
I love Dr. Loomis in this movie, even though he's patently absurd.
He's insane!
He's insane. And I guess after you meet the boogeyman, you know you've been treating the boogeyman for 20 years. Now you realize that.
The ranking of bad guys that are most harmful to human life is Michael Myers 1 and then Dr. Loomis 2.
And Dr. Loomis has no filter. Like, he will scare the shit out of anybody, like I said.
Yes.
To the crowd, after the cop realizes his daughter's dead, he is just
one-track mind.
Projecting. Like, he has a... If he could, he would have a megaphone and just yell out his exposition. His,
y'all see Michael Myers? The man can't be killed!
I studied him for 20 years. And he would give that soliloquy and all those great speeches to everyone throughout this movie. And it's just hysterical because he's like Ed Warren from the Conjuring universe.
Yeah, Mr. Exposition.
There's just people coming out of their houses like, oh my God, we've been trick-or-treated to death tonight. And Loomis is like, as he's running away, you don't know what death is! It's just hysterical. I love that.
Yes, the over-the-topness is a little too much for this movie.
He's Gerard Butler from 300. He is a last word freak. We'll fight them in the shade. He's a last word freak of last word freaks.
So this is your best scene?
It's best. It's hysterical. Again, all the stuff with Jimmy is hysterical as well. I was expecting Jimmy to die at the end of this. I was expecting him to be like, "I'll save you," and just run into the fire as Lori's like on the ground. I totally thought that was going to happen because he's such an incompetent moron.
That would have been amazing.
How did they not have him come back in this movie? He was hysterical. I mean, they made him into a gag. Slips on the pool of blood.
Slams his head into the horn.
Slams his head into the horn.
I'll save you.
It's going to happen. And it didn't.
Missed opportunity. Right here.
Missed opportunity. Another best is Mr. Sandman works extremely
beautiful.
Well.
Beautiful. It's the beginning. It's the intro and outro to this film. And where this fits in the Halloween universe is, again, it sets up a couple things as... We have pretty much a similar ending to Halloween 1. Laurie's being loaded into an ambulance, being taken away. It's even though we didn't see that visual, that's how the movie started because she was taken away. But and we have Michael Myers is dead, right? Finally killed, finished. And that's going to stay that way for another 6 years. Michael Myers isn't reintroduced until 1988 in Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. As far as the Laurie Strode storyline goes, we have one more legitimate chapter to get to, which is Halloween H2O.
Now, Michael, I have one more worse scene, though, that I cannot go past.
Go ahead.
Lori has a cracked foot. She has a broken foot.
Yes.
It's a fracture. And the paramedics taking her out of Haddonfield Hospital are like, "Oh, watch your step as we let you walk up into this ambulance after your trauma and with your broken foot that you ran on somehow. Yeah, let's have you walk from your wheelchair into the ambulance." This is the most preposterous thing of the movie for me right there.
Haddonfield's...
They're medical
state employees.
Staff. Right.
Because they're medical staff, their police department.
Not great.
They're not... They're EMTs. Not the highest quality individual.
So that's all I got. You got anything best or worst left?
No, we covered it, and I'm excited to get to H2O, which I think is an infinitely better movie.
Yes, it is.
So what is it they say about best laid plans?
Right. This project has spun wonderfully out of control, humongous for the both of us at this point.
We figured once we pass the 50-minute mark on any movie, we've gone back and forth, because originally this was going to be an episode per movie.
Right.
And then we were like, "Nah, it's too much. Let's condense it. We only need to do one episode on Halloween 1.
Let's double down, though, on this is for posterity's sake.
Yes.
This is
going to the annals of history.
Halloween 3 got good numbers for us.
Yes, surprisingly, and thank you for listening.
Halloween 1 we released over the weekend, so we hope Halloween 1's numbers will pick up. But we're doing good stuff.
Here. We've come too far,
we're
as you've said.
Too much fun.
So yes, instead of bogging you guys down on your Monday mornings with a 3-hour long episode, because I have a lot to say about H2O,
right,
and I'm sure Mike does as well, we're going to hit stop here. This will be your Monday morning fix. You might get a Monday afternoon or maybe a Tuesday morning fix. We'll see how it goes as well. But yes, this will be a single shot episode, and we're going to finish up the Laurie Strode storyline, at least as far as H2O takes it, in the next episode, which we will also do in a single shot and be its own self-contained episode coming up soon.
Right. We'll have some shout-outs in there. But here's what I'm scared of a little bit, Michael. You know, most of my research for Halloween 2 was about, you know, that documentary. It was about how the fandom is so intensely enthusiastic for this movie.
Yes.
And I was probably the biggest, what did they call that, Thorn? What is the wrestling villain? Ham?
Heel.
Heel. I was the biggest heel in the history of mankind for this movie, or was I? I don't, because I really enjoyed this movie.
It's awesome. I want to say that. I think it's awesomely the way you prefaced it, and that's exactly true.
It's a great bad movie, but there's also a lot of things from a screenwriting and story perspective that are legitimately scary. And we tried to, you know, weave that through this story.
And it keeps making history. I mean, the tropes that it kind of has started and has been abused to death, sure. And when you watch them on rewatch, they might be a little tiresome. But when you put it from the perspective of this is kind of where a lot of them started, at least this, the magical triumvirate of this, Friday the 13th, and of course, Nightmare on Elm Street, this is historic.
And I will say, the first rewatch of this wasn't bad. Like, I was into it, and like, I was caught in suspense. Rewatches 2, 3, and 4 got increasingly funny because the awesomely badness came through, and that's where I'm at this stage. I watched this Listen, Halloween 2 fans, I watched it 4 times. I don't want you to murder me in my sleep, is what I'm trying to tell you.
and I will be giving out his home address. Now, to piggyback on that thought, I hadn't sat down and watched Halloween 2 for years. Having watched it immediately on the tails of Halloween 1, like right. I did, I've got a lot of enjoyment out of it. I was thoroughly impressed with some things. And again, a lot of stuff falls short, but that's why it's a campy horror classic.
Yes, and I'm the snooty critic you can love to hate, I hope.
So we're going to hit stop here. This will be your fix Halloween for the day. We're going to just stop trying to lie to you guys about what we're doing going forward. Just come along for the ride. We're doing the entire Halloween series. Just strap in. And if you enjoy horror, if you enjoy campiness, if you enjoy Michael Myers, if you plan on seeing David Gordon Green's Halloween reboot, sequel, remake, etc. Mm-hmm. on the 19th or thereafter, this is where you want to be. We're giving you all the information and hopefully providing enough of a deep dive for you guys to find value in it and use it and prepare yourselves as much as you can be prepared.
We are having fun with this. That's the bottom line.
Reality does suck. Keep watching movies with us. You can reach out to us on Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MMN Oscar on Twitter, Mike and Oscar.com at gmail.com on Reddit. Michael, final words of wisdom here for Halloween 2.
Do not get injured in Haddonfield, Illinois. Those paramedics, this hospital.
You may just want to avoid the town altogether.
Will not take good care of you.
Wonder if anyone there actually pays taxes. How are those people paid? Anyway, yes, of course, we will see you for Halloween H2O soon. See you. Mr. Sandman.